Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, you know, it's the largest city in DeKalb County, and Jasmine Cabo is just the second mayor for the city of Stonecrest. So she'll join me and talk about top priorities and her overall vision. And also,
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been
ready. It's been quite a journey for the group Arrested Development. Our Hip Hop at 50 series continues. We'll talk about their journey. And back in 1993, when they won that Grammy for Best New Artist, woo, Lord, we're going to talk about all that. Those conversations coming up, but first this. Georgia politicians are weighing in on gun violence after a mass shooting in Atlanta's Midtown earlier this week that left one person dead and injured four others, as we hear from WABE's Sam Greenglass.
With the Gun Violence Archive recording 190 mass shootings so far this year, the reaction to this latest mass casualty event followed a familiar routine. Republicans offered sympathy and prayers. Democrats pressed for tighter gun laws. On the Senate floor, Democrat Raphael Warnock said gun violence is knocking on all our doors. Last year, President Biden signed a bipartisan gun safety bill, but Democrats say it's not enough. In an open letter, Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens wrote plainly, "It's the guns," and said this moment should serve as a call to action. Last year, Governor Brian Kemp signed a law making carry permits optional. In a statement, he wrote that he is heartbroken and joins all Georgians in praying for those impacted and their loved ones. Sam Greenglass, WABE News.
In other news, mental health conditions are a leading cause of maternal mortality in Georgia. And maternal health advocates say more needs to be done statewide to understand and prevent the problem, as we hear from Jess Mador.
Maternal mortality includes death during and up to a year after pregnancy. The problem is on the rise, and it's been a growing focus for General Assembly lawmakers. Representative Sharon Cooper, who chairs the Health and Human Services Committee, says postpartum women may not always tell anyone they're struggling.
Because they think there's something wrong with them. They've got postpartum depression from all the hormone changes and all the extra work that they're having and the demands of the baby. And we need to help them get help.
A task force is organizing ahead of the next legislative session to tell state lawmakers how to improve this system. Jess Mador, WABE News.
And Georgia's 2024 presidential primaries will be on March 12th. Our other WABE politics reporter, Raul Bali, has those details.
In announcing the date, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger acknowledged there had been a push to move up Georgia's primaries.
I know that some wanted Georgia to have a date that was even earlier and become one of the four primary states, the first four primary states. But we believe the March 12th date maximizes Georgia's influence and obtains the greatest economic impact while ensuring that no party loses delegates.
Democrats wanted an earlier date so Georgia could play a bigger role in its presidential nominating process. March 12th puts Georgia's primary on the same day as Idaho, Mississippi, and the state of Washington, but it would be a week after more than a dozen other states. That leaves the possibility that next year's presidential nominations could be wrapped up or Georgia could be in a key position. Raul Bali, WABE News, the state capitol.
And finally,
I'm just so happy for our community because one of the things that I worry about is the space not existing for them. And so having this happen is so important to keeping the space existing for them and for our community, who is just absolutely the most important part of what we do. So
that is Gabriella Mooney, the CEO of Mass Collective. Now, this is an Atlanta-based organization that has a focus on inclusion for creatives ended its week with a very much welcome surprise. See, Mass Collective's Community Workshop is in Castleberry Hill. It's a place where people of color, queer women, and others can work on making everything from art panels and tables to cutting boards and stained glass. Well, today, MailChimp and its parent company, Intuit, gave Mass Collective a Small Business Big Hero Day Award, which also included $20,000. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but for an organization like Mass Collective, well, Gabriella Mooney says the $20,000 award will help it survive. With rising real estate costs, Mooney says the money will cover rent for the next few months. So congratulations, and what a surprise. This is Closer Look.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org. Support for WABE comes from 100 Miles, a nonprofit committed to preserving Georgia's 100-mile coast. Protecting this critical coastal ecosystem takes all of us. Watch the stories of the innovators and future leaders who help keep our coast flowing at ourgeorgiacoast.org.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. The city of Stonecrest, it's still relatively a new city. We would say it's in its toddler phase. It's situated in the southeastern corner of the county, bordering the city of Lithonia and the Henry and Rockdale counties. Stonecrest is about 17 miles from downtown Atlanta and has about a little bit over 59,000 residents. Now, if you've been paying attention to the news the last few years, Stonecrest has been in the news, and it hasn't been good. We'll talk about it in a moment, because right now, in her first year, comes this. Jasmine Cobble, she was sworn in as the second mayor of Stonecrest in June of 2020. There's a lot to talk about, so we will begin with Madam Mayor. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking the time. Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
You told me before we came on air, you started your career in college and radio. Yeah, you dabbled in radio a little bit.
I did. Just a little bit. As you can see, my path took a different turn.
Did you have a cool radio name?
No, I just went by Jazz. Jazz. It's cool enough.
All right. Before we get into Stonecrest and all that, I do want to just back up a little bit and reflect, because we've had a major incident here in our area in Atlanta with another mass shooting. You are the mayor of a city, so this is still close to your city. When all this is taking place, did it make you think about what plans you all have, and maybe in talking to your police chief and everybody else and just going over, hey, do we have a plan if something like this were to happen? And just your overall reflection.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's something that we all thought about immediately. First, of course, you're thinking about your family, your close friends. Is anyone that you know in that area? But also as a government, you think, are we prepared? What systems do we have in place? What communication tools, what plans are laid out that everyone knows how to follow, when to follow? And is everybody ready to jump on board immediately? So I think it's something that we all take an assessment of. Luckily for us, it's not something that we take assessment of only when an incident like this happens. Mm-hmm. It is things that our city manager, actor city manager, and all those public safety personnel involved, including our county, are constantly working on.
How big is your police force?
Well, we still use DeKalb County.
You still use that, so that DeKalb County is your overall. How is that relationship with DeKalb County?
Yeah, it's going really well. Yeah. It's going really well.
Anything that you feel like you need more from the county, and you have a pretty good relationship with CEO Thurman?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's my guy.
That's your guy?
That's my guy.
Tell your guy to answer the phone, because we're trying to get him on the show.
I'll pass the message along.
I'm sure he's listening.
The relationship is good. I mean, we work through, you know, the county is large. Of course, the city is just one city in it, although the largest city in the county. So we constantly are having conversations. Today, we're working on our intergovernmental agreements, tightening them up some, putting some measures in place, some metrics that we can hold each other accountable to, just trying to make improvements in quality of life.
Let's start here, too. Let's talk about identity. And listeners, regular listeners to this show, know that we love asking this question about certain areas. How would you describe the city of Stonecrest's identity? Is it still developing?
Absolutely. Yeah. It certainly is. But I think for the most part, our community is one that's a connected community. We work on being connected more and more every day. But it is a city that operates based on this identity that if we are one family working mm-hmm. together, then we will be sustainable and we can surely make sure that our community survives from now to the end of time.
And your government, the way you're structured in terms of governance, it's a little bit different than, let's say, City of Atlanta, where the mayor tends to have a lot more authority and power. Does that work for you? I mean, obviously you ran for mayor, so you must agree with it. But
yeah, and I was on the city council.
Yeah, you were on
from
council.
Day one, too. So it's not something I'm not accustomed to. But we've also had a change in government and governance, rather, in that time. So we will continue to massage that to figure out what is the best system that works for us. Today, I'm not a strong mayor like the Atlanta mayor. And obviously Atlanta is a larger city, more established. I don't think that that's off the table for the future. Maybe not in my time, but I don't think it's off the table.
When we talk about a council manager system form of government, yeah. For listeners that are not familiar with that, you just said I don't have a lot of strong authority here, but you know you do have some.
So absolutely.
For example, what do you have? You have the, I hate the word power. You've got the power. You know what needs to be approved by you, and then the rest is left up to this form of government, this council manager system.
Sure. So the council manager form of government means that there is a city manager in place mm-hmm. running the day-to-day operation. So every service we provide, every department head is reporting to the city manager to make sure that we're providing services. So when we talk about the difference between the legislative side and the executive side, which I sit in the executive branch, mm-hmm. and we share responsibilities in making sure that legislation moves so that we solve solutions through legislation. And so a lot of the legislative priorities mm-hmm. rest with the city council. But it's my job to provide the vision for where we're going. Mm-hmm. So the vision comes from the executive branch, and then the council legislates its way to make that vision a reality.
How's your relationship? You've been on city council, so you know. How's your relationship with the council and city manager?
Oh, yeah, we're doing fine. We're doing fine. I was yeah. there before. So, and most of our council members are the same. We've had two new ones come in since then. So that continuity was important for us.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you were on council for five and a half years?
Uh-huh. Yep, 5.5 years.
And so
from day one.
The first mayor, Jason Larry, who's mm-hmm. been in this building mm-hmm. and probably in that chair where he's sitting. Did you notice any red flags? Did you have any concerns? Because there's a whole lot, and we're going to get to it right now, but did you notice anything? Did you have some concerns back then when he was mayor?
Yeah, I think it's well documented, my concerns and how I displayed them, the role I took, the action that was supported by constituents and other council members on some of the things that we saw over the years.
He admitted to, for lack of a better word, stealing nearly $1 million in COVID-19 relief funds that were supposed to go to struggling businesses. Mm-hmm. And I think he was ordered to pay nearly $120,000 in restitution. And then there were some other issues, too, with Ms. Boone, your former senior economic development manager. As well, sentenced to 6 months of house arrest and a total of 3 years probation here for her involvement with helping then Mayor Larry pocket these COVID funds. How have you, or are you still having to gain trust from folks in from Stonecrest?
Absolutely.
And you understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're working on that every day. Our goal is to bring confidence and restore that confidence, which is one of the pillars of my platform when I ran for mayor. Was to restore confidence throughout our community. That's not just with our residents, but that's also with our business community, as well as our civic organizations, our faith-based community, and all those that partner with us, even to down to everybody on the local level. That's other governments, and of course, our partners in labor as well. And so, yeah, there's that constant trying to rebuild that trust, rebuild that confidence.
How do you do that? Is it just by showing, or is it being more in the community, having an open-door policy?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all of that. We first of all, work. Mm-hmm. We work to deliver the services. We work to improve those services. And then we find the gaps where things were missing and fill those gaps. So we're out in the community more. We're having way more community events. Our calendar events is robust. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to use our American Rescue Plan funds to help fill in the gap where COVID relief funds did not because of that unfortunate situation. So, yeah, we just work every day really hard at trying to accomplish all of it.
In terms of transparency and accountability, you know, is there a more robust checks and balances system?
Absolutely. A lot of that started when we made some changes to the charter by separating the legislative branch from the executive branch. So that by itself created a lot of that checks and balance that was missing, which is kind of what allowed those unfortunate circumstances to happen. But also internally inside of City Hall, making sure that we provided services based on transparency, but also based on what was actually needed, right? Mm-hmm. So not some of this kind of fantasy dreams that were the cart before the horse, in a sense, really laying the foundation of building the city. So I talk about kind of being like in year one and year six all at the same time, because there are some foundational things that were never set up.
Like what?
Like, for instance, really just having a robust finance department. We operated with one, maybe two at the most, for the first couple of years, personnel in finance. Well, now we have a finance team, I think, of eight, and still, and there's a few more that vacancies to be filled. All right. So we hired an in-house CFO, and that CFO has set up this finance department to be able to run our city. We've gone from a $12, $13 million budget to $15 million, all in 1 year, by being able to do revenue recovery. And then displaying that through catching up on all of our reporting, mm-hmm. and making sure that we are doing our audits on time, making sure that our financial system is in place. We just procured an ERP system to be able to do all of this. So, yeah, a lot of work, but good work.
Let's shift for a moment and talk about leadership style. You know, how do you define your leadership style, and how open are you to having a collective input, feedback, criticism, all that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to it all. You kind of have to be, right? In order to be halfway successful at this, you've got to be really open to it. But one thing I am confident is that I know government operations. I think engagement from our citizens, our stakeholders, all that together helps us make the best decision possible. But I am very confident in my ability to demonstrate my leadership through knowing government operations. My master's degree is in government operations, but also I've been with the state government for quite some time as well. Mm-hmm. So knowing how to govern in a way that still runs a business. You know, we're in the business of governance, right? So having feedback from all of our partners, all of our community members, is what makes it so that we're checking the box, we're hitting the mark, right? Mm-hmm. We're not creating what we think people want, is that we're actually going to those and say, hey, what is your desire?
What are you hearing from people?
Quite a bit. We hear from people that, you know, we're looking for economic development, mm-hmm. which we knew, and which was one of the three services that we took on immediately by legislation. So we're working on our economic development plan today. We have a consultant working on our economic development plan. We actually have a survey out right now, hoping that and encouraging all the listeners to fill out that survey for us to help us get some feedback there.
Do you want to attract? Can you all attract more big business? I mean, tech is huge, obviously, here in this area. You think of some areas like I had the mayor of Forest Park on. She talked about this. We're kind of industrial, so we get a lot of that out there. Mm-hmm. What is a good economic development partner for the city of Stonecrest? What needs to come there?
I think that we have the potential to attract any size, large, medium, and small. We have so much to offer in our 38 square miles that we have suburban and urban character areas. We have a commercial, residential, industrial, but also wonderful recreation. We're the home to the Arabia Mountain, not only Arabia Mountain, but the National Heritage Area. Mm-hmm. So our recreation is stellar and stands out among many. We think that we can have a regional impact on economics for this state. We have two industrial parks. So when you add all that together in 38 square miles, mm-hmm. right, you're not talking about just one singular thing that makes Stonecrest.
How do you sell the city of Stonecrest?
We're the best city on the planet.
Okay, everybody says that. Every mayor that's been in here has said that, whether it's College Park, East Point, Decatur. Everybody said that. Okay, but how?
Ours is true.
Well, okay, but how do you sell the city of Stonecrest to bringing some major development in there, and at the same time making sure those residents who have been there, that they don't get priced out?
Absolutely.
I have a particular project we'll talk about in a moment, but how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a gentle balance, for sure. Making sure that we have intentionality behind how we recruit and retain business is important to us. Mm-hmm. We understand the value of those who have been in our community for 20, 30, 40 some years. We understand their desires to keep certain areas suburban and where it doesn't. You're not infringing on the urban character area, because they move to Stonecrest for that reason, to mm-hmm. be in a serene place that's quiet. We also understand that we are dealing with a generational shift. Folks who are now interested in working, living, and enjoying and experiencing their neighborhood right all in their 38 square miles. Mm-hmm. So it certainly is a gentle balance.
I have a question from a listener who says, this listener says they live in your city. They said, will you please ask the mayor about the following issue? There are plans to build over 300 housing units on Turner Hill at Hayden Quarry. Mm-hmm. This will require the removal of hundreds of trees. Most importantly, there's a large compressed gas line with warning signs and underground access points on Turner Hill. This is problematic, obviously, to this person. Let's dig into that. What's the issue here? Yeah. And you've heard this, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So this, I think that's a great question because it's a great example to answer the question that you just asked me, right? This gentle balance between adding density to our city, which is what attracts businesses, mm-hmm. people patronizing those businesses sure. is what the business industry is looking for, right? But then also making sure that we're preserving the rights of those who live in the community, like Hayden Corey, mm-hmm. Where you hear 300 homes and you think that's a lot of people all in one place. And that may not be why I moved here, right? Mm-hmm. I moved here to be in a place that's quiet, where there are lots of trees. So this is a great example of how we have to balance economics, mm-hmm. governance, and quality of life. When we talk about attracting major businesses, the first thing they want to know is how many people you have in your square mm-hmm. mileage or your radius. And then they say, well, Stonecrest, you're not quite dense enough for what we do.
But this is not a business, so to speak. These are housing units, right? I don't know if is it a workplace type situation where you have
this units? Is single family.
Single family.
Yeah,
okay.
This is single family. But those are the types of things mm-hmm. that businesses look for. Okay. Do you have density? Mm-hmm. Do you have enough people to keep my business open? Same thing to some of the other residents. We want to have things like that business mm-hmm. that wants people. So we have to really sit down and look at our comprehensive plan, which is what we're reviewing again this year. We look at our future land use map and decide where are the best places in the city to have density, where it can support businesses that mm-hmm. certain folks want, but also really preserve what it is that the residents who live in that area came there for there in the first place.
This gas line that this listener just emailed me about, what the issue with that? You have folks who are going to make sure.
Absolutely,
that
yeah.
It's our not engineering explode.
No, absolutely not. Our engineering team, our planning and zoning team, will certainly make sure that they're looking at all the site plans. They're looking at all the architectural design. They're looking at there are state requirements, there are county requirements. All of that will be considered certainly.
So you see that it could be a balance between having this project and it may be preserving some green space. There
absolutely.
Is, you think you can do both?
Oh, absolutely. We're doing both literally every month.
How is your affordable housing out there? Boy, I tell you,
I know. It's a hot topic everywhere.
Yeah.
It is.
Y'all got some affordable housing out there in Stonecrest?
Stonecrest probably has, as a price point, the most affordable housing, certainly in DeKalb County, but probably this side of the state. What we try to balance affordable housing with is, of course, our economic development plan, but also our planning and zoning, mm-hmm. our code. Does our code support affordable housing and where? Mm-hmm. So those are things that we're looking at. When I say we're in year one and year six all at the same time, that's kind of like a year six thing. Are we constantly making sure that our zoning codes, our legislative processes are affordable housing friendly, mm-hmm. workforce development friendly, senior housing friendly? Do we have that structure in place?
And I looked this up because I think according to Redfin, your median sale price of a home in Stonecrest was about $250,000.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In today's market, that is considered a steal.
Uh-huh.
You know, do you need to? And I actually had someone say, you know, we need higher price homes also rose to attract. Do you absorb that type of philosophy?
Absolutely. I think we need a good mix of it all.
A good mix of housing stock?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we certainly need those that are on the higher end. We need those who are for first-time home buyers. We need those who are just getting, you know, recent graduates just getting into the market. They may need rental homes until they transition into home ownership. We think that we in our square mileage, though, in our 38 square miles, we can have all of that.
The city of Atlanta has partners like Invest Atlanta, and there are all the partners that can help with types of first-time homeowner
yep.
programs. Do you have anything like that in Safe Stonecrest, or do you wish you had something like that?
That's what our economic development department is working on.
Mm-hmm.
So, year one and year six, that's a year one, but we're doing it in year six.
You got a lot on your list is what you're saying.
We have a lot on our list, Rose, a whole lot. But we also, of course, have the DeKalb Housing Authority. We had a Stonecrest Housing Authority. Mm-hmm. We defunct it for just a second. We'll start to look at in the next few years how we revitalize that to make sure that we have the proper housing mix. So these are all things that we're working on all at the same time while projects are coming in, as the listener mentioned. So it's all a balance that we have to juggle every day.
this new economic development plan. It also is a film and entertainment plan.
Absolutely.
And listen, well, right now with the writer's strike, don't know what's going to happen, but it's very clear that Georgia and this region is a hotbed for film and entertainment production, all of that. You look at East Point, which has a lot of that activity going on. You look right here around Atlanta. Every time you turn around in my neighborhood, I see a truck, 8 trucks, and I've never been in any Netflix series. I'm working on that. You see that being a big part of Stonecrest in this development plan, letting folks know, come here, film, you know.
Absolutely.
Film the next series under 50 Cent and Power. I don't know, whatever he's got going on.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have 3 movie studios, studios in Stonecrest, all 3 very active. So we see movie trucks and films quite a bit. So our Film and Entertainment Commission is hosting this survey to try to help us create what this plan is for film and entertainment and television. So we've seen a lot of movement quietly. Right? So now it's time for us to take that message, take what we have seen, and make that extremely loud so that all of those across the state or even across this country are aware that Stonecrest is a great place to film.
You talked about housing. I want to move into transit and mobility, because that's a big issue regionally here.
Sure.
And you all are obviously part of, you know, the ATL, that whole region. Would you like to see better connectivity to Stonecrest? I mean, I think right now we can get to you by what, a bus?
Yes.
Other than, I mean, you can't take a scooter there, but, you know.
Yes, yes.
How
so transit expansion is a big deal for us. Today, we are working with MARTA to build the transit hub in Stonecrest. Yes, ma'am. So we're excited about that. Both our senators and our Congressman Hank Johnson has secured federal funding to be able to build the transit hub for Stonecrest. So we're excited about that. We just continue to work with that with MARTA. So that's a big step into transit expansion. But it's not the only step. There's always a conversation. And right now, Stonecrest is kind of on the top of that conversation for DeKalb County and expanding transit into Stonecrest. So, of course, there's many different modes of that. That's a heavy rail, light rail, BRT. So that conversation still kind of goes around. But transit expansion is important for us.
I got to ask you this. Are you team heavy rail, team light rail?
I'm team whatever transit expansion comes to Stonecrest the fastest.
Just get it here is what you're
just
saying.
Just get it here. Get it here and get it here in the lifetime of those who are coming to Stonecrest now.
Yesterday I had a conversation with Atlanta's chief sustainability officer. Of course, when you talk about development and growth, the environment, sustainability issues are there. What type of sustainability initiatives do you all have for the city of Stonecrest to make sure that, you know, everyone, and there's equity in that too.
Absolutely. Which is, equity is an important part of that conversation. We'll talk about that another day.
But a whole
equity is a huge part. Yeah, I mean, that's all a part of putting all these master plans of Stonecrest together. That's all a part of our parks plans, our transit expansion plans, our housing plans, our economic development plan, our comp plan. All of this ties into, what does Stonecrest look like 10, 15 years from now? Are we equitable? Are we sustainable? Are we environmentally conscious? Do we have enough housing mix to accomplish our goals, but to accommodate any kind of resident that would come to Stonecrest? Do we have the proper mix of entertainment, retail, industrial, commercial? All of those things is a mixing pot that we're stirring every day.
Being the largest city in DeKalb County, where do you see Stonecrest perhaps 2 years from now?
Yeah, I see Stonecrest 2 years from now already being in a competitive space for this state. I think we're on the right path now. I think that trajectory for us is right around the corner. Just getting some of these small things, they're actually large, but in the grand scheme of things, getting these things in order, making sure that we have these plans in place so that we can start leveraging federal dollars, state dollars, and all kind of partners to help us get to the end result.
And Stonecrest being a place where a small business can thrive as well as a major project, and depending on where you are and your income.
Absolutely.
Gaps, we want that to be closed in terms of income inequality.
Yes.
But you see Stonecrest being this city that is welcoming and everyone has an opportunity for growth and prosperity.
Absolutely. I see it that way now. Mm-hmm. I just think that we've been the best kept secret. Right? I don't think that
so that's... So who's running the marketing?
We now have a communications and marketing team.
Is this guy over here staring
this guy
at me?
In my corner.
All right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we have been our own best kept secret. But I think that was on purpose and with intentionality. I think that's what the community wanted back then. Now there's been a shift because there's been a shift in just the generation. So to become vocal about who we are, what we are, mm-hmm. and our identity has been something that we now will scream from the rooftops, from the mountaintops, and let the world know.
And then the question that every mayor gets, y'all got some good barbecue and ice cream places? I ask that every time.
We've got everything you can imagine.
I'm coming out there. Jasmine Cobble, the mayor of Stonecrest. Madam Mayor, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Okay, let's go back. Everybody, just remember where you were. 1993 Grammy Awards.
And the best new artist is Arrested Development.
And the Grammy goes to... Go ahead, bro.
Tennessee Arrested Development.
The album was 3 years, 5 months, and 2 days in the life of the group was Arrested Development. I know I had my copy. I still got that CD, and I forgot to bring it. Now, Arrested Development, they will be the first hip-hop artist to take home the Grammy's Best New Artist. And they also garnered Best Rap Performance by a Duo or Group. And that category included, hold on, Public Enemy, them little kids crisscross, Beastie Boys, and House of Pain. I ain't a big House of Pain fan, but you know, whatever. Groundbreaking in so many ways. And as I always say, it's not about the destination, but the journey. So as our Hip Hop at 50 series continues today, it is the journey of Arrested Development, formed in 1988, landed in Atlanta. I am so honored and happy because I've been seeing his brother for a long time. Now, his folks named him Ty Thomas, but we call him Speech. And also joining me is the very brilliant artist, creative, dancer. She's just an overall brilliant creative. Mm-hmm. And it goes by Mansha. I'm going to get it right. Mansho Ishii. I knew I was going to get it wrong. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you.
Yay,
thank you.
That was such a beautiful introduction.
That's what we do. Listen, let's go back a little bit to 1993, because that was an incredible year for Arrested Development. Let's talk about that moment at the Grammys, you know, Speech. You up there with your dashiki and your sandals and your locks and, you know, y'all looking fresh, looking very motherland and all What was that moment like, that space?
I don't know. It was very surreal for me because, you know, at the time we, you know, a lot of the award shows happened at the same time. So we was doing a lot of award shows like month after month, week after week. And also that was probably the height of our career. So just in general, we was doing tons of interviews, tons of shows, tons of everything. First album, learning about the business. Mm-hmm. Yes. So there was a lot of new going on. And so that's why I say it was surreal. But growing up, for me, I always loved the Grammys. You know, I used to watch the Grammys every single year and dream about being on that stage, right? Because a lot of my heroes were on that stage in the past. And so being on that stage in person was just buck wild, you know, and it was surreal and it was incredible. And it was just one of those, like, dream come true moments for me.
Wow.
Yes.
Ishii?
It was crazy, okay? I was like, when they called our name, I was like, what? You know, because I think in one of the categories, we were up against Billy Ray Cyrus. I think it was in Best New Artist.
Yes,
so we thought he was going to win. I know I did, at least.
Yeah.
And so when they got us, you know, called our name, I was like, what? but
that's a crazy year. And we're going to talk about that later on in this series, because I always say 1988, 1992 in terms of hip hop.
Yeah.
Look, yeah, Dr. Dre's The Chronic that was released.
Yeah. Facts.
You know, Gangstar. I mean, and I was a huge Gangstar fan. I mean,
Me too.
Too Short. Now, you know, me and Short, we talk about this EPMD.
Yeah.
Y'all, and to hear y'all come, it was just, it was a lot that year.
Yes.
It was pivotal.
Yes.
Very pivotal and very revolutionary in terms of the diversity of content that we were putting out and that labels were daring to promote, right? So simultaneously with that whole era of the music you just mentioned was also the TV shows and the movies that were going on that were speaking about diverse issues within mm-hmm. Black culture. So it was just an incredible renaissance time period.
Speech, let's go back to the origin of the group. And was it the vision to have, because at that time, and we saw a little bit with, you know, sort of Native Tongue up and out of New York, out of those areas with, you know, De La Soul and the Jungle Brothers and all that, and of course Tribe Called Quest. Here you come with not just audio, but you had this visuals, you had creative, and it was generational.
Yeah.
Was that the vision always?
You know, I wouldn't say always, but definitely it became more and more the vision, right? So basically in that time period, concept was very important. You just mentioned a lot of groups. Tribe, on their first album, they had like rice hats from Japan on, and they had dashikis on. And Jungle Brothers was a very conceptual group. But Public Enemy in particular was a very conceptual group. Chuck D was the hard rhymer, but Flav was sort of the comic relief. And the S1Ws was the security outfit. And then they had the Minister of Information with Griff. So there was a lot of concept going on. I think for us, we really wanted to bring that same level of concept.
And Isha, you brought in this brilliant energy visual with some vocals, because we're like, oh, look at this sister here. I was like, okay, I'm about to go to the club. Trying to dance like Ishii, and they're like, sit down, lady. But what was it about this group and what you knew you wanted to bring to it that said, okay, I'm in?
Well, you know, it's so crazy. I was only 13 when I joined the group.
Yeah.
So
did you ask our mama?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I think we did. I had to think about it.
Just checking.
Yes. Yes. And so I grew up, my mom taught me how to dance. She was one of the first Black-owned dance schools in the state of Georgia. It was called the Gaither School of Dance. So I've been dancing since I was two. My sister and a guy by the name of Ian Burke took me to the audition.
A legend, by the way. Yes. Ian Burke is a legend.
A legend, exactly. And it was actually my sister's audition.
Yep.
And she was dancing for James Brown and a bunch of people at the time. And so I went, I did my African dance. I had hammer pants, a polka dot shirt, because I love Kwame.
Oh, yeah.
I had these patent leather shoes on, but I did the African dance. And honestly, I feel like I brought just the Southern, I'm from the SWAT. So I grew up right in Southwest Atlanta. You can hear this country accent. So I think I brought just that whole energy, and I love to dance. Like, dancing is my passion. I love African dance. So I think I just brought that Southern, you know, feeling to the group and the energy, you know.
What was the reception like inside the community of hip hop? You know, you don't have to name names, but, you know, because there was some folks that was hot that y'all won.
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes that's part of competition, but.
Yeah. You know. Well, initially it was love, right? Because it was a different energy. The South wasn't really getting recognized for hip hop a lot. And so it was initially love, but then when we started taking up more and more and more space, and what I mean by that is competitively, we were making more of a, you know, an argument for where hip hop can be, what it is, what it isn't. And that became an issue for a lot of artists. And we used to get a lot of flack from hip hop artists, and to some extent, a lack of support from some places for two reasons. One is because of the conscious stance that we had as a hip hop group at a time when gangster rap was still striving to take up more space as well. And then also because we were from Atlanta. I mean, no one can underestimate how real the divide was in hip hop at the time. Atlanta didn't have any huge acts that were really worldwide known at the time. So you had the West Coast doing what they were doing. You had the East Coast, Upper East Coast doing what they were doing. But Atlanta still wasn't thoroughly established as a hip hop place yet. And you could even see that when Outkast won Best New Artist for the Source Awards. You could see and that was after us.
Yeah.
So imagine us. So in other words, go backwards from that Source Awards and imagine how hostile it was for us initially.
We had a couple of plugs pulled on us.
Facts.
Shows.
We literally had people pull the plugs while we were performing. And we still wrecked it and still crushed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was crazy.
Literally that kind of competition, that kind of hating.
But
you know what I'm saying?
we laid such a foundation. We were rehearsed 8 hours a day.
Facts.
So we were a band as well. So it's like when they pulled the plug, we just went old school, kept it very church-like.
We went a cappella and we went with whatever we got and we just still rocked the show. And in fact, to be honest, they did us a favor because those were pivotal times for us. Jack the Rapper, we got the plug pulled on us. And in San Francisco at the
San Francisco.
At the, I forget what it's called, the Fisherman's Dwarf.
Yeah.
Wharf. And we got it played by us.
I could look up that tour and see who was on there. And I could probably guess who.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to say any names right now. We know who it was. And they actually did us a favor because we was at that time when people were still like out, you know, the jury was out on us. Mm-hmm. And so when we rocked that night, despite that downfall, it really made the jury go on our side even more. It took us to another level.
Let me ask you this, and Isha, I'll start with you.
Yes.
And you complete this. Hip-hop is...
Oh, my God. Ooh, I like that. Ooh. Hip-hop is colorful.
Word up.
That's exactly what it is, because it's everything. You know what I mean? It's like a gumbo, a good soul food dish. You got a little collard greens, got a little mac and cheese. You know, it gives you everything. You know, it's whatever you gravitate to, what your spirit, your energy gravitates to. So that's what I would say. It's colorful. All
right. Speech, hip-hop is?
People power. To me, hip-hop is literally a gift from God to, especially for Black people, to express ourselves without having the general mediums that other people have to express themselves worldwide. And so that's what I feel.
But hip hop, it's also, it ebbs and flows in different trends.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the trend part. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll let you take that further. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, I feel like the trend part is our downfall. See, hip hop to me shouldn't be about trends. It should be about talent and consistency of art, of the art form, pushing the art form forward. Now, trends, on the unfortunately part, it can be negative and positive. So when we're on a positive trend, which we had in the late 80s, early 90s, it's great. It's powerful. We get people going to college more. You get people buying Black business-owned products more. You get all of this great stuff. But then when it goes negative, you get people shooting more. You get people doing things that are detrimental to us. So
folks talking about their life, their community, storytelling, I think that's to be accepted. I mean,
without a question,
you know,
you're
saying when it gets beyond all these other, as my daddy would say, foolishness,
exactly,
right.
And when the foolishness is magnified more than the consciousness, so what we loved, and I'm going to assume you did too, because you mentioned it earlier, or at least you alluded to it. Early in the late 80s, early 90s, there was this diversity of message, right? So you still had Two Live Crew, you had NWA, but you had Tribe Called Quest and Arrested Development and X-Clan and everything in between. But when you get certain ignorance magnified and multiplied way more than any other consciousness, now it's a propaganda machine, and that's different.
What concerns do you have about the movement? Because that's what everyone tells me, hip-hop is a movement. It's a billion-dollar movement.
Yes, it is.
You want everyone to be free to express themselves, just like you all did.
Mm-hmm.
But what concerns do you have, Ishi, in terms of where it's going? Is it, or do you have to just let it go through this?
Yeah, I would love to see more diversity in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of amazing artists out here, just even globally, you know, that are doing hip-hop now. And, you know, the internet, you're able to search and find them on your own. You know what I mean? A lot of independent artists, but mainstream, that's not what they're pushing. Facts. So for me, like, I would love to see a Lauryn Hill right now, somebody like that, that's more mainstream. We have a lot of great women that's out here doing that. You know, just like Speech said, diversity. That's what I loved about our era, because it was like, if you want to, you know, listen to Two Live, you could. If you wanted to listen to Tribe, they gave you options.
But you don't see collectives anymore, or groups.
Yeah.
You know, not really.
I mean, you don't see. So is that because it's issues and look, controversies, which you all have had, you know, is that the reason? Or it's easier just to focus on one individual and market them because of social media? You know?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I think it's based on more of a corporate and mogul mindset that we've adopted over some time, and the branding thing. You know, we didn't used to talk brands. Like, we weren't corporate thinking in that way. We were creative thinking. So collectives happen in a beautiful way when it's about creativity and coming together to do something cool. But it's different when you talk about branding, because branding, it does make more sense to focus on one artist. And if you'll even notice live, a lot of times live, like someone like a Drake or a J. Cole or a Jay-Z will literally be on stage by themselves for an hour and a half show. Mm-hmm. That's unprecedented. I'm talking about without a DJ, no dancers, no nothing. Yeah. Just one human being on a stage with a spotlight at a stadium. That's like unheard of in hip hop.
When you reflect on the contributions of the group Arrested Development, we should take the time and go ahead and list everybody if you want to go ahead and give them a shout out. But when you reflect on the contributions of the group to hip hop, what is that legacy? I don't know if you worry about it, but what is the legacy or what you hope your legacy?
I want people to, when they think of Arrested Development, to think about the community. Because like you said earlier in your introduction, you had Bob O.J., rest in peace, yep. The elder. You know, I was the youngest in the group with the bald head, you know. You know, you had Speech, he had the locks. Everybody had Roz. Everybody had their different vibe and different look and different energy. That is okay to be yourself, number one.
That's right.
And just stand in your authenticity, you know, who you are. Yeah. And that, you know, it's okay to be different and you can change the trajectory of the world with your art.
Speech. Before I get to the legacy question, what have you learned about this journey? Because this was part of your vision. And would you have done anything different?
I learned a lot about the journey. I mean, gosh. But as far as doing anything different from a leading a group perspective, especially in the early years, you know, I would have learned more about the industry, understood how this industry works better and apply that to the group situation. A lot of what we were doing, it was the first time any of us were doing it, period. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have the knowledge of what to do better. So as far as going back and saying what I would change, those are some of the things. That's what I'm saying.
And your legacy?
Legacy, I agree with what Ishi said perfectly. You know, I feel like we are a group that represented the community. So if you couldn't find yourself in one of these members in this group, then you probably weren't part of the Black community. Like, there's somebody that represented everybody in that group. And that's what I thought was dope.
And what is the significance of that first album, that 3 years? And
I think it's one of those examples of really dope music and really great conscious concepts getting to actually be appreciated and celebrated in the mainstream. Like, not initially, like, started off underground, make no mistakes about our journey, but it did end up being able to break the mainstream. And that's really, really rare and dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, because even if you add up all the conscious groups, P.E. is probably the only one that you can mention that did the kind of numbers we did. Mm-hmm. And that's including Tribe, unfortunately, or X-Clan or, you know, many others, Paris. There's so many that I can mention.
Your debut album, what, 6 million, 5 million, 6 million?
4 million in America and then, you know, millions overseas. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that dope?
What did your mother say then, Ishi?
My mom was always supportive because she was a creative. She was always a creative. You know, my mom was a creative. And so she was, you know, she was always what they say, 10 toes down.
Always 10 toes down. Miss Gaither was always down.
Always.
And the group, I have a listener who says, Rose, are they still together as a group? So you all.
Yeah, we're still rocking. Mm-hmm. We still tour and still make records and everything. Mm-hmm. In fact, we got a brand new mixtape we just released a couple weeks back called On the Cutting Room Floor. It's a bunch of records that we haven't released in years.
Yeah.
And so we just released it. And then we had a record called For the F in Love that we released last year and a record before that called Don't Fight Your Demons. And all these joints are getting mad love from the fans. Many people have said it's album of the year for the year that we released it. So I'm really grateful. And we rock them live in the shows, too.
Rock them live?
Yeah.
All right. Speech, Ishi, thank you both for taking the time. Thank you for being part of this movement.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And you all have had a lot of people that have been involved. So I want to go ahead and name them. I've obviously got a headliner, but go ahead. Give everybody they do.
Yes.
Word up. I'll let you start. Okay. And then I'll finish.
Well, shout out to the original members, Baba OJ, Early Tariq, a headliner, Razadon, Speech, of course, and myself. And we want to shout out Miss Dion Ferris and Paulette for singing on a lot of our records.
Yeah, Dion's been on this program set right there next year.
So. Nadira Shakur, we got a shout out. Terry Axum, DJ Kimmett, Larnae. We got a shout out. JJ Boogie, Farida Aleem, One Love. We got a shout out so many people.
Everybody.
DJ Kimmett's my dude. Thank you so much. That's it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are LaShawn Hudson, Daniel Razel. Tiffany Griffith is our supervising producer. Our engineer is Sawyer Vandevert. Stay tuned to WABE 90.1 Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.